Hello everyone, it's Friday the 4th of July, and welcome to episode 258 of the Kite Podcast with me, Ben Eagle.
And me, Will Evans. With combines now rolling in some parts of the country, we're taking a look at harvest prospects today, the feed markets, and exploring some of the global factors that could impact supply and prices in future. To discuss this, we are joined by Kite Podcast veteran James Bolesworth, who's Managing Director of CRM Agri Commodities, and Chris Pickles, who is Procurement Manager at KW Feeds. Also with us is podcast producer Becky Ray, and as always, everybody's favourite dairy market analyst, Chris Walkland. Chris, over to you for the milk market report. Where are you this week?
Well, I've been out and about at the marvellous RABDF Gold Cup Open Day this week at Harper Adams, my old college. And a great day was had by all, I think. The dairy unit looked brilliant. Well, the sheds did anyway, and far better than I was there, which wouldn't be difficult. I didn't get up close to the cows and wouldn't be able to judge a good one from a bad one, but was assured by somebody who I thought would know that they looked pretty good and all had four teats as well. So there's been a big improvement there too since my day. 25% improvement to be precise. Only joking there, Will. Oh, Will's a governor at Harper, by the way. He's very important there.
I am.
Anyway, congratulations to Harper Adams. I did a talk there in front of lots of people and gave them the benefit of my opinion on the pretty positive prospects. And afterwards, I was told somebody actually listened too, so that's a first. But will people be listening to what I've got in my report for this week, I wonder, or will they be ignoring that too? Well, here it is. The week got off to a not very good start with the GDT dropping 4%. It's the fourth drop in a row and by the largest amount for a year. So to what degree should we be worried? Well, the first auction in July has a track record of being terrible anyway, so it did not come as a surprise. It's nearly always down, not least due to the time of year. So a drop was expected, and there's likely to be another one next auction and possibly into August too. I don't think it was nearly as bad for us as for the New Zealanders, as whole milk powder led the way down with a 5.1% drop, and we don't make whole milk powder here. New Zealand butter fell 8%, but EU butter only dropped a bit and stayed above 7,200 euros through to October. I think the threshold price to be worried about is 7,000. So that's a positive, I'd argue, and it's actually higher than current EU spot prices. Arla's skim powder only dipped a bit, and again, according to expectations. So all in all, I think the auction converted into a milk price of around 37 to 38p, which is several pence down on the previous auction. All of this will affect market sentiment, and there is already price slippage as end-use buyers, that's those who buy from your processors, not your processors, are trying to bid prices down and largely succeeding, judging by some of the spot prices. Those are, for butter, as low as 7,000 euros, so that at that threshold I was talking about earlier. I've not seen any prices below that, though. The butter futures also posted another week of negatives. Butter was down another 80 euros this week, but the average held above 7,200 euros, the same as the GDT. Cream is still high in Europe on the back of the good weather, but is dipping as demand for butter wanes. In the UK, the price is about £2.80 to £2.85 a kilo still, but I've heard it over £2.90 as well. So that's returning processors are cream income per litre of over 15p, again, its highest level since January. No change on skim milk powder as expected, with a largely negative GDT. Cheese is also weakening on the real market. That's inevitable with a sentiment slide, as we're seeing. My PTF price for cheese came down last week as the recent gains didn't hold, and forward prices from Stonex, well, they were the same for cheddar at 3950 sterling, with mozzarella down just under 50 quid to 3,485. That's a European price. We're much higher over here. Finally, spot milk is around the 30p mark still. So to what degree will these market declines affect your milk price? Well, of course, they might if they continue and intensify, but no one in the market is panicking. And Arla is very optimistic still. It said in its milk price letter this week that the outlook is firm and markets are firm. But that was before the GDT. But also there are some knowledgeable people in New Zealand dismissing the GDT as a blip as well. So milk prices will probably be okay because, well, it's the summer period and the summer does screw up the market. Buyers take cover before they go away, demand drops off, and then prices drop off too. Come August and September, when they're all back at their desks, they usually realize they haven't bought enough product. The prices aren't falling in a way that they thought. And guess what? They all piled back into the market at exactly the same time, and up goes the price. I do wonder whether feed buyers are more rational than dairy traders. We might find out later. So I'm not worried at the moment. No one is talking prices down yet, but global volumes are increasing. Finally, before I go, has anyone been having any nightmares recently? You've been having any nightmares, Will or Ben? This week, the press is full of stories about how eating dairy in the evening gives you nightmares. Yes, that old wife's tale again. If people think that eating dairy gives you nightmares, they want to spare a thought for you lot going through and what you lot go through in producing the stuff in the first place. As far as I'm concerned, it's a wonder some of you can sleep at night. Actually, of course you don't, because most of you are awake during the darkest hours doing what's called milking. I remember learning about that in my Harper days, Will, and remembering it's actually quite important on a dairy farm. It's a fact that has stayed with me ever since. Take it away, guys.
Thank you, Chris. I have a pint of milk every night and I never get nightmares. So, yeah, I'm sure I'm not the only one either. Anyway, James, welcome back to the show. What is the general sentiment on harvest prospects here in the UK and elsewhere?
Thank you very much for having me back. And yeah, I mean, there's clearly a lot going on still in the market, as there has been the last few times we've spoken, and you've kindly advised me on the podcast. But I think overall, you know, we're now into that sort of northern hemisphere harvest, and particularly for the likes of wheat and barley and rapeseed, still a bit to go for the corn. But I would say if we look at it from a UK perspective, early indications probably highlight better than last year, but worse than average, if you were to sum it up. And I mean, if you want to get a bit more into the numbers, there was the latest AHDB ADAS crop ratings report came out. That's highlighting that winter wheat, for example, 38% good to excellent ratings, slightly up from 36% the previous month. But if you look at the last seasons, we're looking at around 56%. So well below. Winter barley at 50%, slightly higher, but well below the same point last year, which was 69%. And last year wasn't exactly an optimum year for winter crops, if we remember. So still looking well below last year in terms of overall farmers' opinions and the ratings which they are submitting at this stage. Spring barley is an interesting one. Yeah, that's 52%. So that's seen a decline overall and well below 71% last year. So I think if we look here in Northern Europe, things overall have picked up clearly since the real dryness, which we saw a couple of months ago, but still remain well below last year and well below average. And now it'll just become a case of seeing what comes into the bins. And I expect, you know, the early numbers, as they always are, you know, whether you're looking in Europe or Russia or here in the UK, early numbers tend to be a little worse than average numbers, because most farmers will be topping their worst fields and getting them out of the way. But it'll be really interesting to keep an eye on how these things progress in the coming months. And right now we're seeing a bit of harvest pressure as the crop rolls in the US. Sentiment in France and wider Europe seems to be improving slightly. We're seeing, for example, barley prices relative to wheat widening and barley prices dropping in the likes of France as harvest hits the bins. So I would say overall, it's still a pretty finely balanced market and one where harvest data is really going to matter this year.
Yeah, I drove past some combines rolling in the field near Newport, actually, Chris, yesterday on the way home from Grantsville. Very exciting. James, can you give us an overview of what's happened then to prices of the main feed commodities in the last few weeks?
Yeah, so, well, yeah, in the build-up, we saw this dryness, which added a bit of risk premium back into the market, and then prices trended lower again. And then, of course, you know, it sort of quickly becomes a distant memory, but news in the Middle East, you know, things kicking off between Israel and Iran, and then the US getting involved and trying to disable Iran's nuclear capabilities. Then the concern, you know, that caused oil prices to spike, and we saw grain prices following. And then, of course, it became clear that, you know, the Iranian retaliation on the US was all really for theatrics. And the oil traders didn't see it as anything meaningful or long term. So they started selling the oil price again, and grain prices followed after that. And right now it's back to kind of focusing, that Middle East story is on a well-supplied oil market, but with an eye on what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz. You know, 30% of globally traded oil goes through the Strait of Hormuz, and wheat prices are linked to oil prices and corn prices, you know, through energy, through biofuels, and of course through cost of production. So you know, there is a connection there which we need to be mindful of, but at the moment the oil market's not terribly concerned about the situation and the tensions out there. But I think if there's an issue amongst the Strait of Hormuz, then we could see a bit of a spike. But history has shown us that those disruptions and those spikes related to the Strait of Hormuz don't tend to last much longer than a couple of weeks, a couple of months. And right now it's about a well-supplied global oil market. So markets very much geopolitically linked. Tariffs news is still on the horizon. And of course, currency is playing a big part in global markets at the moment.
Yeah, gosh, I love speaking to you, James, because it's just a reminder of how, you know, we all get focused on our little local parts of agriculture, don't we? It's just, you're talking about the Straits of Hormuz there. It's just, yeah, how global impacts can have such big effects on us as farmers. Chris,
I like his expressions. I'm going to have to set up my reports, because he says things like the combines are rolling and it's the bins.
hang on a minute. Can I kibosh you trying to sex up the market? Oh, please, Chris.
Let's look at that, maybe.
Look forward to that next week, Chris. Chris Pickles, have you just got anything to add there to what James said? Are you seeing similar things?
Yeah, I think. And firstly, Will, thank you very much for having me back on the podcast. And yeah, just echoing a couple of James's points. Like, for me, the currency piece is having a big effect on prices currently. We've obviously seen the dollar slide away quite dramatically over the last couple of months, really, it feels now, to kind of multi-year year lows against the euro, but more importantly, first here in the UK against the pound. That's benefiting commodities that we're importing into the UK. And with some of the ongoing issues there, let's say tariffs, let's say conflicts, that's really kind of influenced some of the co-products, let's say, that we use as animal feed. So the main one for me would be the soy meal market, which when oil spiked in the aftermath of the Iranian Israel escalations, actually soy meal went the opposite direction. The kind of oil leg of the soy complex rallied away following crude, but of course some of the meal still has to go somewhere, and if oil price is high, generally demand would support that. They push the crush through, and of course the meal leg needs a home, and that kind of weighed on soy meal prices. Add into that the dollar aspect, and we saw a good benefit on soy meal prices here in the UK. So that's been a good positive story that we've seen over the last couple of weeks in terms of beneficial prices there. And yeah, that spike in the wheat market was short-lived. We didn't really see, or I certainly didn't see much in the way of farmers selling into that. Is that an opportunity missed? Time will tell on that one, I guess.
Okay. So what's feed demand like at the moment, and what are farmers buying? It's obviously we're in the middle of a prolonged dry spell in the UK. Is that driving things?
Yeah, the feed demand's kind of a mixed bag. There's two extreme poles that we're seeing at the moment. There's a lot of very short-termism. So we're doing a lot of spot business, and that's across a multitude of products, straights like soya, rape meal, biscuit meals. They're all in the bag for the nearby buying shopping list, let's say. We're doing a lot of soda wheat on the spot as well. Longer term, when we're doing runs, they're not six-month runs. We're doing some like 9-12-month runs at the minute, right the way through to like next July. And a lot of farmers taking out the remainder of this summer's cover. So we're doing quite a number of runs where we're running August through to April, so taking out not just the tail end of this summer, but right the way through the winter as well. So yeah, two kind of poles there in terms of what they're buying. In so far as the winter cover that and what's been bought, again, mixed bag, some blends, quite a bit of straights. In recent weeks, as I say, with this soya price coming off, we're doing quite a lot of winter soya now. Almost feels like a naughty word, a UDR. Has been something that's been around for a while now, but the shippers and crushers in the UK have now got a bit more confidence to offer prices forward. And there's been a lot of Jan-April soya done recently. Customers are adding to their cover now that they can buy that position, and there's a bit more clarity there.
What about straw, Chris, in terms of volume and quality?
It's something we've not yet touched on. I guess Ben, is the fact that the crops with the warm dry weather that we've had, a lot of the cereal crops are quite a bit ahead of where they might normally be. They're maybe sort of week to 2 weeks ahead, depending on whereabouts in the world they are. Chatting to a couple of mates of mine who are farmers, I threw the question to them as to what's the straw looking like. And it's, well, not a lot. It would be the blunt answer. And with the crops are effectively focusing on running to seed and filling the head and not so much growing tall. So this winter for those reliant on straw could be a very interesting scenario where straw prices could be supported, could be in short supply. It would be my take on that one.
Do you think a bit more of it will get baled, though, Chris, because the harvest will be a bit easier and the weather outlook looks pretty good, whereas a couple of years ago when there was a lot of straw about, but a lot of it got chopped behind the combine?
Yeah, I think those that can will, I think, absolutely focus on getting what they can baled. Hopefully we have a dry like, it's been so dry up to this point, let's not spoil it by having a wet harvest. Hopefully we get some dry weather through harvest and things come in with good quality and in swift fashion. So yeah, Becky, I would like to think there'll be a lot of stuff get better. I think farmers, I'd be surprised if many chop it and leave it in the field, that's for sure.
James, coming back over to you, you've already touched on some global events, including Iran, some stuff in the Middle East, and also general prospects for Northern Hemisphere. But I wonder if are there any other events or anything else happening on a global picture that we should be aware of, both the short and medium term?
We've still got to remember there is a war going on between two of the major producing and exporting countries for wheat and corn, particularly, and you know, that as that, you know, continues to roll on, there's a long term impact. There's a long term impact because the Russian dollar's weak, and the Russian dollar being weak, you know, relative to pre-war levels, obviously means their costs of what they're importing have gone up, including, you know, inputs, but also from a Ukrainian perspective, you know, it's that long-term erosion of planted area, the economic impact, and of course it leaves a big uncertainty because, you know, only yesterday ballistic missiles were hitting, you know, Odessa, which is a major export region. So there is still that, you know, in the back of the mind of the markets, there's the unknowns as to how this all plays out, and of course that sort of long-term impact economically and from a currency perspective and from an export perspective out of that region. The Middle East tensions, we've covered that pretty well, but you know, it's a global issue. You know, it's July 4th today. It's the second Independence Day of the year. You know, Trump's first Independence Day. I think back in February, or Liberation Day, I think he called it. But you know, that was quickly followed by a pause on all the tariffs. And that pause is due to end on the 9th of July. So who knows where we end up? But, you know, recent sentiment, if we look at markets taking a bit of a bounce in the last couple of days, a lot of that was on the back of the fact that there was some early signs, there's expectations that we're going to see announcements regarding US trade deals. They signed a big deal with Vietnam. Vietnam purchased around 16 million tons of corn imported. So, you know, it's not insignificant, but the big one is China. You know, will a trade deal be announced with China in the coming days? And also, you know, the uncertainty of when this pause ends, what then? You know, there's still a lot of questions to answer in global markets. And currency, you know, Chris mentioned it, but I think it's a huge one. If you consider now, the UK, the GBP versus the dollar is the GBP rallied 12%. So, you know, if you were to take 12% onto and add that to the price of domestic wheat, you're adding about £20 a ton. So, yeah, I think it's really important to remember that a big part of the domestic market here is currency linked. And if we were looking at a much weaker pound, then that, of course, leads to higher prices because the imports which we're requiring this season and will be requiring next season as well, if the pound is weaker, suddenly become more expensive, and that means that demand for domestic grains and oilseeds goes up. So I think those are the big ones to keep an eye on: trade deals, currency, and all the geopolitical stuff going on at this stage.
Chris Pickles, should we come back on you? Do you have any comments on what James has been sort of saying and alluding to in terms of that sort of global picture?
Yeah, I think one we've not mentioned so much is maize. James touched on it earlier, and the maize crops in Europe, obviously it's more a summer crop, so still some way off be it harvest and what have you. But with the hot, dry weather we've had, I think there's definite potential for the European crops to be downgraded, to be smaller this year. That's likely to support imports into the EU of maize. Is that going to support prices across the Atlantic? That's one to keep a close eye on. I think the maize in the UK, they say knee high by 1st of July. I think there's some crops local to me here that are on lighter land on the top of a hill and look like they're definitely struggling. I think for those crops as a whole, how much moisture are we going to get over the next couple of months? I think that will play a big part, and could then see a swing in, from a grains perspective, from maize towards wheat and barley. Is that going to support those demand of those commodities into the ration and support those prices? Could be maize that starts. We've been talking for a while. It feels like there was going to be plentiful maize around because of big crops out of South and North America, but if it could be just a little changing of sentiment there, one to keep a close eye on. James has covered off the tariffs and potential disruptions out of the US. It just feels like we have to keep a close eye on President Trump and what he might do. Don't think anything's quite nailed down with the EU yet regarding tariffs, and is there going to be any retaliation there? Who knows? That could impact things as well. So, yeah, it feels like there's always something, and well, it's just when we solve one potential conflict volatility, another one comes on the horizon.
Yeah. James, with everything we've discussed today in mind, do you think next year's cropping will favour any particular crops in terms of what goes in the ground?
I think, if you looked at it purely on a price basis, you'd probably say that, domestically, for example, rapeseed is holding up better than other arable crops. You're looking at, if you look at it from a price ratio perspective, we're at about 2.1, which is, rapeseed at 2.1 times price of wheat. That's an interesting perspective, I think. But, obviously rapeseed still faces some significant agronomic challenges. But I think, if you look at it anywhere in the world, it's really difficult to find crops which are making margin for farmers. Whether you're producing corn and soy in the US or wheat and barley here in the UK or Europe, in most cases it's at or below cost of production. And I think, history has shown us that that's a clear warning sign. It might take months, it might take a season, but historically speaking, you don't tend to see prices sustaining levels below cost of production for a prolonged period of time. We're already seeing farmers around the world reducing the amount of inputs going onto crops, and of course, area might start to suffer if you're looking at loss-making crops for a prolonged period of time. So I think that of course needs to be taken into account, and you couple that with all of the FX, the currency situation we've discussed, and a big fund short in markets, and all of the trade uncertainty and tariff uncertainty. There's a lot at this stage, which buyers, I suppose, have to digest in making a decision. But overall, I think the big picture is prices are down and below cost of production for many farmers.
Yeah, this prolonged dry spell might. Do you think that all that make people think twice about growing spring crops next year? You've got to be wary, haven't you? Because it might be a completely different year next year. It might rain all spring, but I feel like all the spring crops at the moment are just really struggling, aren't they, with dry weather?
Yeah, I think I pinch it for Ollie Harrison. Heard him on Radio 4 yesterday. He's talking about his grandpa saying, no two seasons are ever the same, and that's fairly true, isn't it? When you look around and actually. I think that most farmers around the world have one thing in common, and that's sort of an inherent optimism in how things will pan out, and keep planting and keep hoping for the best. But the economic situation has to stack up over the long term.
Yeah, you've got to be optimistic, haven't you? Chris Pickles, you speak to a lot of farmers. What is the sentiment on forage in terms of what might need to be brought in? Grass is kind of starting to burn off a bit now, isn't it?
Listening to James's answer just then and the optimism, I was thinking brings very nicely onto this question, because I think there is an inherent generational optimism among farmers that there's always a chance things can turn a corner, and probably many years of no two seasons being the same, let alone two a spring and a summer and an autumn being the same can apply to that. I think I was chatting to a farmer yesterday regards some cereals that I was buying, or we buy year round, but was just sorting out for harvest, and chatting about his forage cuts. And I think he's had roughly he's gone 30% down, 50% down, and not a lot on his three cuts so far that he was telling me about. And he's hoping on some rain, because he's going to be in quite a bit of bother otherwise if it doesn't come. But of course, I think we all know that we could yet have a wet harvest. We could have a wet autumn or a mild autumn that gives us a couple of late cuts of silage and bales a few out. I don't think there are a huge number of farmers that are currently forward planning and kind of preparing for that. I'm hearing of some that have taken whole crop silage. So with the wheat price being, as we've discussed, quite so low, below cost of production, as James says, in many areas, that they've taken the opportunity, take the whole crop. That's something else in the silage pit that'll do us some feed for the winter and fills a bit of a hole. But obviously the window for that now is fast closing across much of the country. I think that there's still an optimism, but I think we need a bit more forward thinking, a bit more planning, really. It probably plays well into a kind of from a Kedewu perspective, so do we demand. It's a nice feed that's kind of gentle on the rumen, that's going to would play a good buffer in the ration in terms of filling a forage gap. It's probably on a fine balance, a knife edge at the moment regards forage production heading into this winter.
Yeah, we need to get John Allen back on the podcast, Becky, so he can make it rain. Can you arrange that for next week?
I can. I think there's a bit of haves and have-nots, isn't there? You know, you speak to some of the guys in the southwest, and they've seemed to have had rain just exactly when they've needed it in between, you know, certainly from a dairy perspective and forage cuts. And the same up the northwest side, I think. North Wales is always a bit of an anomaly weather-wise, isn't it? But, you know, I think there's quite a difference between the east and the west, and quite regionalised as well. And I think the other thing, Chris, in terms of, you know, you saying we need a bit of foresight, I think with where the milk price feed price ratio is at present, that there is no urgency, because whatever the forage stocks look like, we're probably going to be reasonably economically be able to buy it into to produce milk perspective. Or, you know, certainly with the return for what we spend on feed. So I think there's a little bit more of a appetite for risk to see what the next month probably looks like, is my gut feeling.
Yeah. Okay, that's all we have time for today. But a very big thank you to our guests, James Bolesworth, Chris Pickles, Chris Walkland, and podcast producer Becky Ray.
Thank you also for listening. Please see the show notes for more information, including our podcast disclaimer. We will be back with you next week. But for now, it's goodbye from all of us here.